vodka bottle under the seat, case of beer in the trunk, that kind of thing. When I was 21, I got a DWI. I'd been pulled over a couple times before that, but got out of them somehow. So should have had many more, but because of what I blew, I got placed in this kind of higher level. I was with people who had like 3-4 DWIs, and it was the Safe Week Sober Program. And I was not sober through the program, but I kind of like managed it enough that I could make it through until the last week. It was the night before, every class was on a Saturday, and the night before I'm like, you know, I'm gonna have a couple friends over, maybe have a drink, and that's it. And 2 a.m. rolled around, I'd been drinking all night, and I got up and went to class, and they breathalyzed us, and I blew numbers. And, you know, I tell that story because there are so many examples in my drinking career where it's like, I went into the night with the best of intentions, no intention of drinking, or no intention of having more than one or two. And then I did, and like, this was, you know, all I had to do was show up to that class, and I had my license back, and I couldn't do it. When I have alcohol in my body, that becomes number one. And the beautiful thing about that experience is I got introduced to AA because of that. They said, okay, we're going to move you to the next level, the highest level with one DWI, severe repeat offenders, and you have to go to 2 AA meetings by the end of the weekend. And so I did. I went to AA. And I did this next class. I somehow made it through. I was not sober through this class. I made it through, but however, I was going to AA the whole time. So I had people. I had started to hear the message, all that. And it was a really, really messy 6 months. Don't need to hear all the details, but I got sober shortly after that. And nothing spectacular happened the night that I decided to get sober. It's like I was with some friends, and I just had like this deep realization of the progressive nature of this disease and the fatal nature. And it was like, I am going to die. I was 23 years old. I was like, I'm going to die if I keep doing this. And, you know, I hear that in meetings. I've heard it. I've talked to a sponsor about it. But it's like sometimes things just hit different. And that night it did. And so that was 2013, September 17th. I would love to say I haven't had to take a drink since. That's not my story. I'll get there. But it was the start of a beautiful change. You know, I jumped right into the steps with the sponsor, the fellowship. One of my favorite memories from early sobriety is I did this thing called Travel Tuesdays. And it was me, another guy my age, one of my best friends who was twice my age, and these two guys who were in their like 60s or 70s, these farm men. And we would meet at the Alano Club every Tuesday. We'd all hop in the same car, we'd go out to dinner, and we'd go to a different meeting around St. Louis. So we wound up going to basically every meeting within an hour of St. Louis. And, you know, showing up 10 minutes early to a meeting and staying 10 minutes late and chit-chatting is great. But that's not enough for me to feel a part of. And when I started going around with those people, like, that's when I really started to feel a part of. You know, we're driving around, we're laughing, we're crying, we're telling stories. You know, one time my friend was going through a really hard time, and Don, one of the guys, like, pull this car over. She pulls over, and he's like, we're going to say a prayer right now for you. And, you know, 5 minutes later, we're all laughing about something. And it was just, it was a great memory. And, like, that's what early sobriety was about for me, getting in, plugged in, feeling a part of. At maybe 3 months sober, I think, I was visiting my brother in Denver, and we went out to watch the Broncos game. And, like, an hour into dinner, I look up, and there's this wall of alcohol. And it was such an amazing experience because I was like, I have been sitting here for an hour and I just noticed that wall of alcohol. And it talks about in our book, The 10-Step Promises, how we get placed in this position of neutrality where we don't have to fight alcohol. And that was my first experience. I thought would never get sober. And he said, hey, I was actually at a meeting, and he said, hey, I just want to let you know I went to an AA meeting today. And, you know, I was like, wait, what? Like, I didn't know he was thinking about it. This was a man who I was like, I'm not going to talk to you about it because he's never going to get sober. And he went to an AA meeting. I said, okay, cool. You want to go to one together tomorrow? So we went to a meeting, and, you know, here I am 5 months sober. I know everything. And I'm like, Dad, what you need to do is get a sponsor. And he's like, what's a sponsor? How do I do that? You know, but some guy wound up coming up to him and saying, hey, I'll be your temporary sponsor. And my dad just celebrated 12 years sober. And he attributes, he says this every, he's in St. Louis, but every time he comes to visit, he's like, you know, every time I tell my story, I tell him it's because I watched your life get better. And, you know, it just reminds me that I never know who's watching. I had no clue he was paying attention. No clue. And so it's just, to me, like, that's the miracle of this program. Like, people are watching us. Few years into sobriety, I moved here. So I said I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. That was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. So I was somebody who, again, I never felt a part of. I could not make friends easy. I didn't go away to college because I was too scared to. I stayed in my town, and I got a job opportunity here. And I was interviewing with no intention of taking it. I'm like, I'm not going to take that job. I can't move to Portland. I've never even been there. And I just kept going through the motions, and I wound up, whatever, things just happened. I wound up going through it, and I moved here with two bags, started my life over. And one of the first things I did is I went to Atkinson AA meeting. And those people totally welcomed me. And, like, how cool that we can go anywhere, and it's, like, built-in friends, you know? And I could say, hey, guys, I just moved here. I don't know anybody, and I'm scared shitless. And they just, like, wrapped me up. One of the people here had gathered up a bunch of girls. She's like, hey, there's this new girl. She's struggling. We should go out to lunch. And so we all went out to lunch. And this is where my roots are now. And so it's the things we get to do in this program. Like, I've gotten married. I've had two children. Moved across the country. I've got my MBA, CPA license, career changes. Like, all these just amazing things. So like I said, I wish I could say I haven't had to take a drink, but at 9 years sober, my faith started getting rocky, my relationship with my higher power. And I wasn't talking to anybody about it. Like, I think one night I told my husband, like, it was out of the blue. He had no clue I was even struggling with it. And I'm like, I don't think I believe in God anymore. And then I was 7 months pregnant with my second child, and my youngest brother died of an overdose. And as far as we knew, he'd been sober. He had gone to prison and got sober. He was 26 years old. And that was just like somebody like ripped the little bit that was left between me and a higher power. And I spent the next year resentful, in denial. I'm like, there's no God. Why? How is there a God? And I didn't talk to anybody about it. And I think what I've learned from that experience is, like, it's okay to go through what we go through in AA, and it's okay to feel that way, but I need to talk about it and, like, take some action. That's not what I was doing. So my brain started to change, and, you know, there's the story in the book about the guy who retires and thinks he's cured or whatever, and I always thought that was the dumbest story. I'm like, who thinks they're cured of alcoholism? But what I thought is, when you came in, you felt self-conscious, you felt weird, all these things. You don't feel that way anymore. So alcohol's not gonna, it's not gonna have to be a solution because there's no problem in it. You don't feel that way. And again, I didn't talk to anybody about it. I didn't want to be the person at 9 years saying, oh, I'm thinking about drinking, you know? It's an ego thing. I didn't want to say that. And so I drank. And thank God I only was out there for 4 months. But I'll tell you what, like, working the steps and looking back at your drinking is one thing, but working the steps and then actively drinking, knowing what you know from working the steps, is an experience, and it's terrifying. It was about a weekend I realized I made a really big mistake, and I could not stop, even knowing what I know. Like, self-knowledge does not do it. again that time. So that was May 21st of 2023. So I'm coming up with 3 years. Nothing spectacular happened. I just was like, I can't do this. You know, at that point, I was married to a sober man. I had a one-year-old, a three-year-old, a career. Life was just so different than the first time I got sober. And you know, I knew about the peace and serenity that I could have. And so I don't know what happened, spiritual experience, all that stuff. But thank God, I stayed plugged in. And the people in AA are why I'm here, especially some of the ladies here. Because it was a really hard time, and they loved me through it. And I felt very supported, and I knew where to go. I was the one showing up to meetings drunk. I had a service commitment drunk, but I just didn't want to leave AA. So since I've come back, I think that experience was completely invaluable, and for me, like, the people are so, so important to me. My friends that I have in this program, my family, but they're human, and they make mistakes, and so I know the importance of a higher power now, you know, and it's like, I had taken control without realizing I had taken control, and so now, I don't know what my higher power is. Like, if somebody asked me what your higher power is, it is, I don't know how to explain it, but I know that I need something, and so, like, I get it, you know, looking out at a tree. I'm like, that tree, no matter how much I would will it to come into existence, I can't. And that is good enough for me right now. And so I just try to keep, you know, building on that and taking things as they come and just remember the other thing, talk about shit that's going on. Like, it doesn't matter if people get annoyed, I gotta do it because, like, that's the stuff that will kill me inside. So I got my 2-minute warning, 1.5 minutes ago. So that's all I got. So thank you guys for being.
Teaching the second grade, and those kids love me. Like children love like a diseased cat, because I was always hung over his death, and I always thought it was like God's perfect judgment to be hung over in front of really enthusiastic, lovely children asking me questions. Oh, Teacher Charles, and it's like, oh, God, you know, I'll give you guys all A's if you leave me alone. You know, little kids are like, you know, like the description is like, you know, various liquids coming out of various orifices. And little kids stink. You know, they just stink, and you're hung over his death, and you want to throw up in front of the crowd. God, it was like hell on earth. And then playground duty in the Bangkok hot sun. It's 105 degrees, 1,000% humidity. You're gonna lose your job if you don't do your teacher duty. Sitting out there in this leaf tree, no one's gonna plan the playground equipment. You melt your flesh or you touched it. Just sitting out there, and the kids would come and they'd sit next to me, like. They just want to be here, and they stick their hand on my shoulder. Teacher Charles, you look so sad. You know, what's wrong with you? And I just say one of two things. You know, either, well, Teacher Charles went to a wedding last night, or Teacher Charles has the flu. That's the two things. That's what's wrong with me. But they always were kind. And when I was especially sick, you know, especially because my pattern was like, teach for 40 minutes and then throw up in the bathroom. Teach for 40 minutes and throw up in the bathroom. And I did that all the time, again and again and again. Waking up always in the morning, today's going to be different, today's I'm going to quit. And then around 2 o'clock, you know, my classes are finished, I start thinking, oh, come on, Charles, you're overreacting. Why don't you drink something good? Not that crappy Leo beer, which is this, I don't know, there's still stems and sticks floating in it. And I was like, why don't you drink something good? You know, it's like, and then it would start, and again, like Sisyphus, same thing. Well, one day, I was teaching at this school, and there was this teacher that had an AA coffee cup. And I started with that cup, you know, it was like all the teachers' cups are in the teacher's lounge, and they're all stacked up, and the maids stacked them up, and everything. And I have to look into that AA coffee cup. I'm all kinds of one of those people, you know. And I've seen, my name is Bill W. I've seen, you know, Days of Wine and Roses. I've seen, you know, movies about AA, and I thought, oh my God, you know, it's like, and he was all lifed up. I know the slangs. He was incorporating the slogans into our teacher meetings. And I didn't think anything bad about it, but, you know, I knew he was one of those guys. And anyways, one day it was like the previous week, but it, you know, I didn't have a really bad autumn. I wasn't in prison. I didn't come out of a blackout with, you know, in a hot tub with a bunch of hookers with $1,000 worth of cocaine and the president's on the phone. It was just another day like every other day. I was throwing up. Diarrhea. It's in the children's toilet, the children's bathroom, where the toilet is the size of an army helmet. Throwing up, you have diarrhea, you have to make a series of split second decisions, all of which has to be correct. And it's just sick. It's a dog, just green as a praying mantis, just sitting there and it's sick. And then my children, my students, heard me in there, oh, Teacher Charles, he's sick. And they all streamed into the bathroom, pounding on the stall walls. Teacher Charles, oh, God. And I thought, they tell the administration I'm in this trouble. I'm going to lose my job. And if I lose my job, I lose my visa. And if I lose my visa, I lose my wife, I lose my kids. I'll be kicked out of the country. You can't stay there if you don't have a visa, at least for me. So I was scared, and I thought about that guy, and I said, God help me. You know that classic AA prayer, like, God help me. And I heard like this weird, it wasn't a voice, but something said, why don't you talk to that guy with the AA coffee cup? And I did, and I went up to him, and I said, I need to go to one of those AA meetings. He goes, oh, are you an alcoholic? I said, he's like, I only had like a year sober. He said, his evangelical phase. So I went to my first meeting, and so I'm getting ready to go to the meeting, and you think, like, what do you wear to your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I want to fit in. I don't want to be different. I just want to, and I've joined things like the film club or bird watching club and things like that. I never fit in. I don't have the right binoculars. I haven't seen the right thing. And that's what AA is going to be like. So, like, what do I wear to fit in? Like, you know, sort of, you know, wear bum clothes, you wet yourself, you have a rope for a belt, you know, you wear silver, like Bill W, you know, so you fit in. And so, you know, smart casual is the way to go. That's what I did, smart casual. And so I decided to go to the meeting. And I went to the meeting where it was, and it was at the end of an alley where there's a bunch of entertainment venues. And it's going like, oh, this is good. And then you go through, like, well, you know, what am I going to say? Am I going to tell the truth? Am I going to use my real name? You know, what are they going to ask me? You know, how much should I talk? But you know, it's like, I don't know anything about this, what's going on. And I kind of hid in the bushes, and I observed them, you know, like those Wild Planet TV shows. You know, there's the alcoholic in the watering hole, you know, and it was exactly like that. I got near to the meeting, and I did that walking, and it was like my feet, like my shoes were made of lead, going to that door and opening the door and walking in, and there was chairs in a circle. And oh my God, I think they're going to make me sit in the center of that circle, and they're going to say, what did you do when you're drunk, when you're drinking? And they're going to shame me into sobriety, tisking. And that's how I thought AA was. But it wasn't like that at all. I walked in to that room, and everyone said, are you new? And it's like, how could you tell? Sober people, when you're coming in, you're new alcoholics, they're not what you expect. They're clean, they smell good, they've got clear eyes, like, you know, whoa, you're scary, you're really scary. They're all, you know, like, you know, I hope this isn't too alcoholic, but they were like, you know, women that worked in a brothel that hadn't seen a customer in 20 years. I walked in, my God, I was, you know, there was 15 old guys in there, and they were like, oh, it's newcomer, because they don't get newcomers in Bangkok. You know, what kind of alcoholics can get a ticket, get a passport, and go there? We just don't get, now there's many more now, but when I got sober, I was a big deal. I was a toast of the town for like 6 months. Everyone caught me laughing, I said, oh, hey, God, those guys love me. Anyway, so I'm sitting at the table, and sitting at the chairs, and they did the serenity prayer. I didn't know that from anything, so I lip-synced it, because it wasn't on the wall, because I didn't want them to let them know that I was new, they knew that I was new. And it's going around the table, going, you know, I'm Frank, I'm an alcoholic, my name's Bill, I'm an alcoholic, and it's coming to me like, oh my God, I've got lines when I first meet, and I'm gonna blow the lines, and they're all gonna hate me. And then I said, like, my name's Charles, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's the first time I said it, you know, I've described myself that way and to other people, but when you say that in front of a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, it hits different. Mm-hmm. And I said it. I thought, oh my God, the earth is going to open up and I'm going to fall down to the center of the earth. It wasn't like that at all. Then the guy went, no, I'm going to the next guy. I'm a Frank. I'm an alcoholic. It just went around. It was no big deal. And then it was a 12 and 12. I didn't know anything about the steps. And the 12 and 12, step one is about a page and a half. And they just tore through it. They must have read it in 45 seconds. Because they wanted to get to the good part. And the good old bottomless kind of shares, you know. They didn't want to listen to me. They wanted to talk about step one, what happened to them. They talked about being in prison. They talked about losing their children. They lost their wives. They broke their kids' piggy bank for beer money. They did everything horrible. And I'm just sitting there like, oh my God. And they're laughing the whole time. And then I was in jail. I got mental health. I was like, oh my God. He's like, you know, who are these people? And for me, what it was is like all the shame that I had when I came to that meeting, because I did all that stuff. Just drifted away, and I knew these people had something. And they shared something about, you know, it's a program of complete abstinence. I went, okay, well, you know, you didn't need a prescription then. You didn't need a prescription to get benzos in Bangkok. You just go to any drugstore and say, I want, you know, give me this. And in preparation for getting sober, I bought like $400 worth of Xanax. Anxiety. And I decided, you know, that's how I was going to do it. You know, that's not drinking. And then I decided to make that choice of like throwing them away. And my wife, I'm popping them, pop, pop, pop out of the blister packs down the toilet. And my wife's yelling at me, we can sell them, we can sell them. You know, and I, this is like, there were serene fish in the canals of Bangkok. the realization, and I think the step was for me, is that living an unmedicated life, and that was terrifying. To live life unmedicated was inconceivable. It's like you see the commercials of people drinking, oh, have fun with beers, and you know, afterwards playing softball or with food or fish or wine pairings and all that crap. Alcohol is like the secret of life. It's how I fit in. It's how I belong. It's what I look forward to. It helps console me in times of trouble and all the worries of it, and it stills the voices of my constant criticism I have of myself. How am I going to live without alcohol? But I just made that choice. And he goes, well, you know, when I left that meeting, they said, see you, Charles. And I realized, you know, I hadn't heard anybody call me by name, and I couldn't remember the last time. And I knew it was different. I went to that next meeting, they say, get a sponsor. Oh, no, what's that? And it's like, you know, it's about the father you never had, the brother you never knew, you know, you're, you know, it's like, oh, God. And so, you know, I think for the first time in my life, I decided to do something. Like, who do you pick? You know, do you pick some guy who's going to yell at you, you know, like, get the cotton out of your mouth and stick it in your ears or whatever, however that goes, and wear the blue socks on Tuesdays. Or do you have, like, a Mother Teresa sponsor? Oh, you know, you hit your wife and you robbed the bank, but you didn't drink Secret of Dinner. You could have one of those. So how I picked is I picked somebody that, you know, that I don't know, he intimidated me. He was smart. You know, he was successful. He was a single dad. He had a business. He knew the big book upside down inside. He went to meetings. Everyone, and he intimidated me. And that's the guy I asked. But, you know, it was like asking somebody to the prom. Who am I sponsor? And I did it. I think that for the first time that Alcoholics Anonymous is the first time I was always trying to find a way to stop drinking. I was the creepy guy in the bookstore in the self-help section. Oh, it's the crystals. Oh, it's the affirmations. Oh, it's the friend of the universe. Oh, it's the child. Oh, it's the other. And I would buy these books. I wouldn't read them or do anything, but I would buy them in osmosis from my bedside to my brain. But I think when they asked me to do something, like when I threw away those pills, when I asked someone to be my sponsor, and I was gentle. Everything about Alcoholics Anonymous, I was gentle into. I thought I was going to have to, like, okay, here comes the Jesus. They're going to bring Jesus at me. And it wasn't like that at all. It wasn't all. It was, you know, when you start, you know, begin the day, say, please protect me from the first drink, and then say, thank you. And the end of the day, say, thank you. I said, I can do that. But, you know, the first time I had to do it, he goes, you got to do it on your knees. I said, God doesn't have any knees. So, you know, of course, you know, all the hijinks I've been up to in Bangkok, when I'm praying on my knees, I close the doors, I close the drapes, you know, and then set it, you know, knees with the first drink, you know, and I did that. I did it. And that was, again, that's one thing I still do after all this time. I've been sober 26 years. And thinking, like, what do you say? You know, like, how do you concentrate? Like, 15 minutes, like, not, how do you concentrate all that? It's like, I'm kind of like that, a Russian general that's got all these medals on their chest, but you can't see them. You know, old timers, like, well, here's my cancer medal, here's my divorce medal, here's my bankrupt medal, here's my I lost my job medal, here's how my car fell apart medal. I've got all these things I've got to do in my life sober. And that's what I can share with someone else. I don't know about the words, the big book and everything like that. I'm pretty good with it. I mean, I know it, but, you know, that's what I got. That's what I got with all this. I mean, what things do I tell you about, you know, here's, This was what happened to me, and that happened to me. But anyway, I want to get back to, you know, just initially how the steps worked out for me is so I had to do, my sponsor said I had to do like a 4-step after I did my 90 days. And it's like the day's approaching, and if you Google 4s, he goes, well, just, I don't know why he said this, he goes, well, just look at the 12 and 12. It tells you exactly how to do it. No, it doesn't. And this would be small, but I thought, well, I'm just too stupid because I don't know it. And so you Google it, you know, AA 12 step, you get like 5 billion hits. Everybody and his brother has a way of doing it. 5 columns, 4 columns, 7 columns. You even have this one sober romantic app you can put on your computer. You know, I'm mad at me, you type it, you press enter, and then it shows you the appropriate, you know, part of the big book that has to do with it. And it's like, I got rid of that. That didn't work. And so I tried all these different things. There's a California 4 step, you know, and there's the NA version of the Hazleton 4-step, which is 107 pages. You know, if you have sex with a goat, was a goat Catholic? You know, questions that you can't answer. And so I just gave up, and I decided to go to the source. What is the, you know, that blue thing we read? What does it say to do? And I did it. And it was unpleasant. And I was like, and you're thinking, like, okay, so my brother got a better Christmas gift when we were 6 years old. He got a better Christmas gift than me, and I'm so mad about it. What does that have to do with my drinking? You do it anyway, all the stuff, you're mad. And I realized, you know, like that Led Zeppelin song, Nobody's Fault But Mine, that goes through my head all the time. Nobody's Fault, and writing down all the stuff, and I realized, by through that writing, all the resemblance I had were something about me. It was, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't like I wasn't getting shamed or anything. It was just, it was. And so, and then you gotta do your 5th step, and it's like, you know, that was hard to do because I admired my sponsor. He was a great guy. He was smart. He was successful. I was a Bangkok cliche drunken teacher is what I was. I mean, there's thousands of me there. And anyway, but I was afraid to share who I really was to somebody I admired, and I did for the first time. He just sat me down. He was a construction worker, but he had this thing. He walked in, he had this prayer mat for me, and he ding, chimed his bell, and he lit incense and then a candle by the bed. Oh my God, I was like, we're going to kill a goat or a chicken. I could just follow along, and so I'm going to say the Thursday prayer. You had to hold hands, and you hold hands with a man, and then on a metal, on a carpet, that was weird. And then he sits there and goes, okay, tell me the worst thing first. And I did. I told him the worst things first and got it out of the way. And I did everything I was supposed to do, and I didn't understand why I was doing it, but I did it. And I'm waiting, you know, he made me do everything. I had to sit there and wait for an hour, set the timer for an hour. You know, and I read the big book, you know, hand in hand with the Creator. That didn't happen to me. That didn't, you know, nothing. But he said, the next thing you got to do is, he goes, we're going to go to a meeting tomorrow, and I'm going to be there, and you're going to be there too. So I'm going to see this man face to face after all the stuff that I told him. And I was there, and I didn't want to go to that meeting because he was there because of all the stuff I said. And I was like, no big deal. How's it going, Charles? Fine, on there, and moved on. Things got really bad at home. I guess I was married to a really nice tycoon. I mean, a farmer woman. She had a sixth grade education, really good housewife, just really good. Took care of the house, took care of me. And she's always on me about my drinking. You came out, which means key is shit, and Mal is drunk, shit drunk. You came out, you drunkard. And so when I got sober, I thought she'd be happy. Oh, I'm never going to fight anymore. I'll just go talk to my sponsor. My marriage is going to be perfect. I'm going to be like Bill and Lois. I'm going to have a great marriage. And after like 30 days, she said, like, I want you to drink.
Oh,
yeah, it says a lot about my personality. and she, you know, I guess there's a thing in, you know, an Asian woman with a Chinese cleaver that she was. She started waving that thing at me, like, you know, you, I cut you. And it's like, I'm trying to do, like, for the first time in my life, I'm trying to do the right thing. And my marriage is blowing up. And I had a little 5-year-old boy at the time, and I got sober from him. And just like, I wanted to have a family. I wanted to be a good husband. I wanted to be a good teacher. And so I'm telling my sponsor about my marriage and what it's like at home. And that knife was getting closer and closer. It was like, I'd be in the shower. And he just had this little shower. She'd stick the knife under the door. And she'd move it back and forth. And I'm jumping out of the way. What's the matter with you? And she, you know, one time she had this like weird look in her eye. And she had a knife. And she goes, I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to kill our child. And I wrapped myself in a sheet in the corner. I just said, just do it. Just do it, because I'm tired of being chased around the house with a knife. And she didn't. And then I realized I had to go. And I didn't. My sponsor was telling me to leave anyway. He goes, you're going to have to leave that woman. She's going to cut you. I said, what about my son? What's going to happen to him? And everybody's like, you can't do anything your first year. You know, don't do anything. Because I didn't want to. I didn't want to lose my child. And I realized I packed up my stuff, and I realized I had to leave, and he was sleeping, and I had a suitcase, and I was going to go to the school, and I had, you know, he was just sleeping, and you look at your own child, and you see their cheeks, and you see their long lashes, and you say, I'm never going to see you again, I'm never going to see you again, and I'm sorry, because I'm much like my dad, who left when I was young, and I'm never going to be a father, and I hate myself, and F Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, this isn't what I signed up for. You know, write down all the good things that are going to happen to you, because it's going to happen. And it didn't happen. And I left. I left, and I took my 8 silver coins, and I took my computer, and I went to that school. And I was working in the Seventh-day Adventist school. And they're usually, that's a big, people are real square there. And I told him what happened. And he goes, you can stay here. You can stay here at our missionary housing. But he goes, you don't have any clothes. Go back to your apartment, get some clothes, and then come back. And I went there. And I don't know what happened, but within 2 hours, when I was gone, my wife had taken everything. My son was gone. So that was even worse. I had nothing. Everything that I bought, everything was gone. I don't know how she did it. And it was the end of me. And I went to, you know, I went to the meeting. And I complained to them. I just said, you know, this isn't, you know, because it's just like hating God. I understand what that is. I'm trying to do the right thing for the first time in my life, and you did this to me. And you hear all that stuff, well, look, oh, look, God, one day at a time, turn it over, which is not constant. consoling at all, you know, but it's what I say to people there, because there's nothing else to say. And I just gave up. Do I hire a private attorney? Do I get a detective? You know, because he's gone. And so I was teaching at this school, and he was gone, and they always made me read the promises, which is when things, your life is really bad, and reading the promises, it's just the most hateful thing to do. And then after 4 months, I was teaching, and then I noticed there was my son right in front of my classroom playing with a truck. I picked him up, I held him, and you know, nothing smells like your own kid. You smell him, and I said, God, if you give me this, if you can give me this, I won't ever ask for anything ever again. And I've since asked for more than that.
But it's been lovely. It's in a hill tribe resettlement area, and
my mother-in-law bought this property way before this, so all the Hill Tribe people were there, that they grew opium up in the hills. They've all been given free land to live there. These people in these exotic costumes with babies on their backs and stripes. Tribes from all over Southeast Asia, from the Golden Triangle, painted women from Burma. It's like, I can't believe I live there. I really, really can't. Now, at first, it's like, oh my God, take a picture of those people. But now it's like, if I lived in, like, I don't know, Podunk, Texas, and people wearing cowboy hats, after a while, they just, oh, it's somebody in a cowboy hat. Now it's always somebody in some exotic scarf with a baby on the back, you know, rings around their neck or things like that. So it's I kind of fit in now. I love my life there. Alcoholics Anonymous is much bigger than I ever thought. I thought getting sober was going to be like you have a broken leg, and then you wear a cast, and then your leg is cured, but everything else is the same. I have been completely transformed in Alcoholics Anonymous. My life is everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's bigger because of it. And I'm not, you know, I think a good test is like on my phone, every single friend that I have today, Bob, AA, friend, AA. Is your phone like that? Mine is all here, AA. And I have a life. My wife knows nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, and she doesn't care. She says, but why doesn't Charles drink? And she goes, oh, he's in the foreigner don't drink and drive program. She doesn't care. And everything that I said, like when she's mad at the way I behave, which is sometimes she should be, you should know me when I was drunk. You'd get on your knees and thank God that I'm not drunk. I don't care about that either. No torque at all. Anyway, I'm really grateful to be here. You guys are wonderful. You are welcoming to me, and I'm just grateful to be here.